A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Ella Jean Ehrlich.
I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
I'm Rosie.
This is Martina Navratilova.
This is Mark Forbes.
I'm Andy Murray.
You're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello, welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport from Melbourne. We're here, Catherine Whittaker, we're here. She's back. She's well again. Hello.
I'm here. I'm alive.
Thank goodness.
Two ticks.
Excellent.
Two ticks in two boxes.
And we are here on the eve of the year's first Grand Slam tennis tournament. Simon Briggs is here. Hello, Simon Briggs.
What's up?
Simon from the Telegraph there.
He's been in Australia long.
He is feeling it because we're on the eve of the first Grand Slam tournament of the year. Simon's been here for about 2 weeks, haven't you?
Yeah, it does seem like about 3 months, but hopefully the tournament will engage my enthusiasm.
He's a lot more enthusiastic, honestly, than he sounds. He really is. It's written all over his face.
He's got a good tan.
He has got an annoyingly good tan. So we would like to say thank you to all of our Kickstarters, first and foremost, because we are nearly at an end with our campaign to crowdfund 2018. We've done so fantastically well because of all of you. Huge support for us. You still have got a couple of days to get your backing in if you'd like your name on the official website. We've got a backers page so that we can shout about just how amazing you all are for supporting this show. We are going to be here with you daily throughout the Australian Open. Shows aplenty, Catherine. You are not going to be stopping me talking throughout this tournament, no matter how much you might want to.
Well, there's a prospect, isn't there? Yeah. Isn't daily podcasts. Yeah, excellent. We've missed them, haven't we?
We have. And the draw has been made late last night whilst you and I, Catherine, were in the air in respective separate
yeah
planes.
How dare they.
Yes, that all went on without us, but we've arrived to find out who is playing against whom. And yes, quite an event, wasn't it? The official draw. I think it was on court at the Margaret Court Arena, wasn't it?
Yeah, Dave and I, we were on separate flights, but somehow ended up in the Melbourne Airport baggage hall at the same time in the very, very long customs queue, discussing what had come out of the draw. Somehow David Law had already memorised both the men's and women's draws by this stage. We'd only landed about 25 minutes earlier.
It's all very exciting. And Simon Briggs was here in person. And you got an immediate angle out of the draw, didn't you? And it wasn't actually to do with who was playing against which player. It was to do with who was helping to carry out the draw or to be interviewed on the court beforehand. And that was
Maria Sharapova. Well, Roger Federer was there too. That was uncontroversial.
He was kind of overshadowed,
It's not often that Roger Federer is overshadowed, but the Australian Open managed it.
So what happened?
Well, Roger came on first, had a 20-minute interview, it felt like, with Hamish McLaughlin, I think his name is, the guy from the local TV network.
What's happened to Bruce McAvaney? Should I be worried about him?
He had
it's
a year
usually
off last
him,
year.
Isn't it?
I remember he had a year off last year, but you know.
Craig Willis is another one. He's usually there or thereabouts.
Yeah, have they been retired with dignity? Not
Better
Craig. Not Craig.
I like
not
these
Craig.
People.
Me too.
Anyway, that was okay. We had some replaying of the famous corpsing Rafa and Roger trail that they failed to record in 20 minutes in about 2011, where I can't remember quite what the date was. You know, all fun and games. And then Roger went off and Maria Sharapova arrived and sat down and got an equally oleaginous interview in which she was also asked what she'd been doing with her time out, as if she'd taken a convenient holiday and decided to go around a city break tour of European locations.
And, well, let's just say that you and your colleagues on the various British newspapers decided to take that to task somewhat, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, I asked Craig Tiley whether he thought there was any problem with the fact that somebody whose last contribution to the Australian Open had been to pee in a cup here 2 years ago.
Unsuccessfully. Well, no, very successfully, but...
Yes.
From whoever's perspective we're talking, certainly it set off alarm bells which have been ringing ever since. And if you think that the French Open didn't give her a wild card, Wimbledon clearly weren't going to do it either. What an extraordinary gap there is between their responses and what we got here. Just mind-boggling, really.
Yeah. And what did Craig Tiley have to say? Because this, we were just talking about it before starting to record. This is a very PR-savvy tournament, and I know some people will differ in their opinion of what happened at the draw, but I think it's fair to say that the main chorus of opinion is of sort of astoundment and criticism of that decision. I think it's fair to say that overall that was a PR misstep.
Well, the defence is, and you can see they were in a slightly awkward position, there was no other champion available. There are only two champions in the draw. The other one is Kerber, who's in Sydney. So, you know, who else can they get to call up? But
Venus. Had to be Venus.
I would have thought so, that Venus Williams, although not a former champion, would have been an obvious choice. Somebody did make the point to me on Twitter that she was playing the tournament in Sydney when they would have kind of booked the players that were going to do this thing.
Billie Jean King's in town.
Yeah. Look,
Yvonne Goolagong.
You're not getting the arguments out of me. I think it was a misstep, and I also think you're quite right that this tournament is as good as they come in terms of making calls on this sort of thing normally. They don't usually get this stuff wrong. I think they've got this one badly wrong, but, you know.
Was there recognition that they perhaps got this wrong, or was it the sort of defensiveness?
No, I mean, Craig just said she's entitled, she served her time. You know, the same defence that you heard from the US Open when they gave Maria Sharapova a wild card. But it's interesting that there's a very sort of clear split between the old world slams and the new world ones on the whole response to Maria. And I guess you could look at it perhaps as a philosophical difference on what sport's about. Perhaps the Australian and American approach is for sport to be more of a commodity, more of an exhibition, more of a sort of public first phenomenon, and maybe in France and England we see it almost more of as a sort of personal development thing. Sport, we see it more as a struggle of the athletes. We see it more from the perspective of the people who are performing, and less from the view of this is entertainment, you know. And what about all the people who feel that they were hard done by all those years when Sharapova was not declaring that she was taking Meldonium? Okay, he wasn't banned up till the point, but we know that there's been a lot of discord in the locker room caused by the whole affair, and in that context it was incredibly inappropriate.
Yeah, they got that one wrong. Incidentally, one of the reasons, of course, that we're talking about this is because Serena Williams isn't here. You and I covered that in the previous podcast, Simon, the fact that she wasn't here. We now know a lot more about why she is not here, because of an extraordinary interview in Vogue magazine. If you haven't read it yet, I highly recommend it. We learned just how many complications she went through during the birth of her child, the aftermath of it, how she effectively seemed to diagnose herself with another pulmonary embolism. And also, she talked about the psychological difficulties and associated with having a newborn baby, and that so many people will be familiar with. And there were so many other elements to that interview that I found fascinating, to do with her relationship with Venus and how she manages to play against her and avoid her, her eyes, her gaze during matches. She talks about how much she wants to come back and still wants to create history, and that she doesn't want to retire before Roger Federer. It was just one of those fascinating interviews, wasn't it? But when you read it, you realised, crikey, that's why she's not playing the Australian Open.
Yeah, for me, one of the most extraordinary interviews with a sports person I've ever met. I had heard that there had been complications with her birth, the birth of her daughter, that it wasn't entirely straightforward. I had no idea that it had been as unstraightforward as that. I mean, any one of those individual complications alone would have been, you know, enough to wipe out most human beings for a very, very long time. But cesarean plus DVT plus pulmonary embolism plus what sounds like, she hasn't used the words postnatal depression, but certainly struggles along those lines for the early stages of being a mother. I mean, just take the cesarean alone. I mean, that's very major surgery. To a portion of your body which sort of the rest of your body emanates from. I mean, the fact that she played a tennis match a couple of weeks ago.
Who uses their core the way they have to.
I can barely get my head around the fact that she played a tennis match a couple of weeks ago and that she, it sounds like she was pretty close and pretty tempted to play this Australian Open, and it was only the feeling that she wasn't, you know, guaranteed to win it that kept her away, or guaranteed to win it in her own mind that kept her away. We knew she was a superhuman person, but all the more so now. And just a slightly separate non-tennis-y note, her talking about the struggles, the mental and emotional struggles in the early aftermath of having her daughter. I personally find that incredibly important these days in the social media world, where all you see is pictures of doting parents with their gorgeous, silent-looking babies in the 1 second a day that they're not crying. You've got to make sure you get a photo and put it on Instagram so that everyone thinks that your life is absolutely perfect and you've got one of those babies that doesn't cry. I think that's actually quite a dangerous thing, and I think it's very important that women talk about the realities of having children. Not that I've got any real knowledge of the realities of having children, but I know it's not just taking lovely Instagram photos. So good on her for that. My mum had a DVT before Christmas, so she's now planning her comeback for around Wimbledon time.
incidentally, Simon, the other thing that I found really struck me were the quotes from Billie Jean King in that article. And it did feel like, you know, you think back to where Serena Williams has come from over the last 10 years. And when we seemed to be at loggerheads with her all the time. And 10 years ago, she had that incident on the court with Kim Clijsters during the Lions judge during that match against Clijsters. And then there was the one against Sam Stosur. She is so much different now. And she really is carrying, I feel, she is the next baton holder for Billie Jean King. The way she's going, she really cares about the future of the sport and the future of women's sport, the future of women in society. I mean, she's really becoming an impressive person.
Yeah, actually, didn't she give some of the credit as well to Patrick in that article for calming her down? I can't remember what the individual incident was, but she spoke about how he'd relaxed her.
Well, it was to do with the numbers, wasn't it? The trying to get to 18 Grand Slam titles that she was trying to do a couple of years ago, and to join Martina and Chris Evert on that number. And I remember in an interview with you, Catherine, a year ago here, he said to you, why are we talking about 22 Grand Slam titles? Why not 25? Why not 30? And we were like, crikey, that sounds a bit arrogant, doesn't it? But that was his way of calming her down and not focusing on one specific number.
And Patrick's a very serene person. He can irritate people with his sort of sense of entitlement, but I think he has managed to take some of the kind of buffeting out of her life, hasn't he? And make it smoother, and she's become a less emotionally overwrought person in the time that they've worked together. So that's partly why it's been actually an underrated partnership, perhaps. I mean, everyone understands that Richard Williams created, you know, two of the greatest players of all time and deserves the credit for that. But she's kind of gone another level since she was able to step out from Richard and take on a coach who was brilliantly suited to her. And their partnership maybe is underrated because we all look at Serena and go, well, she's so far better than everybody else. Crikey, I could coach her and she'd still win slams. But he has changed her. He has made her a more versatile player, and he's probably made her a more relaxed personality.
Yeah. Before we get on to the draws and the players that are here, just a word as well on a piece written by a colleague of yours, somebody we've had on the tennis podcast a number of times, Charlie Eccleshare, with Nicole Gibbs and Naomi Cavaday, particularly Gibbs's contribution to that, really struck me because it was about mental health and tennis players and the stress that they are under on the tennis circuit, and how she was talking about how if you do have mental health issues at all, this is the sport that is going to test them and take you to potentially some very dark places. I thought it was a fascinating piece.
Yeah, I mean, I think sport in general, we've seen people open up in all manner of sports in the last couple of years about the fact that it seems like a real jolly from the outside, and it can be quite a gilded cage on the inside. Charlie's done a three-piece series over the week, starting with the toughness of going to futures events and finishing with the obscenity of online trolls. I think if you read all three, you probably think that being a tennis player is the worst job in the world. You know, somewhere worse than being a gravedigger or a sort of hospital janitor. But it's not always that bad. Once you make it through the very lowest levels, you know, life does improve. So if you want to be a tennis player, don't give up quite yet.
No, but good issues and important issues to highlight.
Yeah, and you know, we are all a bit sniffy about the fact that, you know, oh, they're all rich and they're all famous and they're all living their best life, but you can be doing that and still have mental health issues. So yeah, good on him. On the subject of Charlie Eccleshare, by the way, he showed up at our Christmas do and Simon Briggs was a no-show. Care to defend yourself, Simon?
I was would have been there a week earlier, but I think David pulled out.
Yeah, that was my fault, actually. Let's be fair. I'm the one who had the snow drifts up in sunny Solihull.
It was Birmingham's fault, yeah, is that was. What we're saying?
So we had to delay a week.
I was free the previous Monday.
And Simon had important matters to attend
to.
You know, it's all right, because he's here now with us in Melbourne. And I should say, before we get onto the drawers, we are sitting in a windowless room here, inside the spanking new media centre at the Australian
Open. We're in a room, David, because it's pouring down with blooming rain. I've only been in Australia 12 hours and it has rained for all of them.
And it's going to rain tomorrow as well.
I demand apparently a refund.
But anyway, we are here. We've had a look around and yeah, they've moved the entirety of the media into a completely new building this year. It seems very spanking and very nice.
Can I just ask one question of Simon? It's not related to the Christmas do, Simon. Before we move on, just going back to Sharapova in the draw and everything, what do you think Serena thought about Sharapova taking her place at the draw ceremony? Yeah. She cares so little about Sharapova that it didn't bother her, or do you think, you know, because she was in her shoes, wasn't she? That is where Serena should have been, and instead was her greatest rival. Or not?
Well, it is hard to say how much attention she's paying with so much that's going on in her own life, but I would imagine there would have been an eye roll at the very least.
It's her greatest unrivaled.
Well, yeah, exactly.
In the words of Chris Clary, yeah. Because, you know, what is it, 18-2? But anyway, I would say she's a champion here 10 years ago. Worth remembering that as well, if you want to put the counter argument to it, and many people might say that she has, as Craig Tiley said, served her time. She is a former champion. Personally, I disagree with it. There we are. So,
served her time out. Her time out is what we're calling.
Yes. So, it's raining at the moment. It's not going to rain from Monday. It's going to be glorious from Monday, and we are going to have matches galore. And even if it is raining, there are three roofs at this particular tournament, and we've had exhibition city over the last week. Every single day there's been some sort of tournament or other or match going on. Just about 10 minutes ago, Rafael Nadal was playing against Dominic Thiem on the Margaret Court Arena with no crowd, with umpires, with line judges, and they played a full two-set match and then a champions tiebreak straight afterwards.
And Hawkeye.
What were they doing?
A score on the screen, so you could actually watch it on the internal TV system with the score flashed up as if it was an official match. It was quite bizarre. Some people were saying, this is unfair on everybody else.
Interesting. We're not sure, actually. We'll try to get clarification ahead of the next show as to what was going on out there. I certainly didn't know what was going on out there. I do know the score, incidentally. It was Rafael Nadal who won 6-7, 6-2, 10-8 in the Champions title. They were playing properly, I'm telling you. It was intense.
You'd never normally know the score in those things unless you actually sat there and kept a notepad and pencil. And it was quite bizarre to have it publicised. I mean, I think it was probably a case of... there were a few people in the stands, weren't there?
A handful, but I don't think it was many. But anyway, it was something of a surprise.
It sounds like Dominic Thiem is back to full fitness.
Maybe
apart from
like
anything else,
hadn't...
because but by all accounts, so the exhibition match he played against Djokovic a couple of days ago, that was less than 24 hours after landing from his flight to Doha, and by all accounts, he was in a very bad way with that virus that caused him to pull out of
what
Doha.
What do you think, Simon?
I don't think he had a virus. I mean, I know he said he did. I just don't think he wanted to be there in any way, shape or form. I mean, it was one of those occasions where somebody gets a vanilla backhand in the middle of the court and they swing at it in such a way that it sort of lands in the middle of the next court, you know, misses by 10 metres.
But he did have a virus. I know someone that was on the flight with him and he was keeping everyone up with his coughing and spluttering. He did have a virus. He might also have not wanted to be there, but he definitely did have a virus.
Okay. I mean, I saw him in the player lounge afterwards and he looked like he was he wasn't in a terribly terrible state of health. He was chatting away and having a good laugh with his mates.
People Simon. Can recover, you know.
Diagnosis, Simon Briggs.
I'm convinced.
Simon, the more pressing health update really that we want from that match is of Novak Djokovic, who was playing, I think, the first time he's played anywhere publicly since Wimbledon.
It was hard to tell because of the state of Thiem, but the interesting thing was the serve, which has been modified quite extensively, and the take-back is very careful and minimal now. He used to swing around with quite a low take-back that sort of went past his shin, and now he's taking it back almost behind his neck, and he's not bending his back nearly as much. And he served... I mean, he was always very accurate with his serve, wasn't he? So it was more effective than its speed would have suggested. And it was exactly the same. He was landing it in the corners and hitting the lines consistently with this modified serve. I think the pace might have been down, but it was hard to tell because there was no speed gun there. It didn't seem that he was likely to get quite as much speed on the ball because there was just less of a back bend going into it. But it was pretty effective. How it would stand up to a series of tough matches, that's another question entirely. I'm still not 100% convinced he's going to even play.
Well, he lost a tiebreak to Leighton Hewitt. Yeah. Tiebreak tens, which I know, again, exhibition, all the caveats of how much we can read into it, and with all due respect to Leighton Hewitt, who is going to be playing doubles main draw at this Australian Open, that you don't want to be losing to Leighton Hewitt, do you?
Well, Hewitt was excellent.
Yeah, I mean, he almost beat Rafa as well.
Yeah, he looked like he wanted to come back, I'm telling you. He looked like he was bursting to just come back.
I mean, if you could play tiebreaks, then Leighton would probably still be a top 10 player, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but it's going to be interesting. I think he will play, but
he's not going to be in great shape.
I'm not 100% sure that he is going to... Well, I don't think he'll necessarily get very far, and I also think there's a question mark as to whether just the rigours of what he's trying to take on here. I mean, if your comeback tournament is a best-of-five-set Grand Slam, and that's what this is, he hasn't had Doha, for instance, and he hasn't had Doha because his elbow flared up again. I mean, those are alarm bells for me, and I wonder whether it is going to stand up to what he's going to have to try to put it through.
Are we going to see Gael Monfils's first ever victory over Novak Djokovic?
Because right?
They would meet in the second round. Yeah, Donald Young is his first round opponent, and then it would likely be
Gael Monfils
who would
round.
Play a qualifier wow. in round one. Yeah,
it's a heck of a draw.
If he's ever going to beat him, it's then, isn't it?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's not a bad time to try.
Yeah, I mean, he'll do quite well to get past Donald Young without having played a match for 6 months.
Yeah,
I mean, we are facing the prospect, Simon, if you think that even Djokovic might not play. I mean, I feel pretty convinced that Wawrinka's not going to play. If he couldn't play tiebreak tens, if he couldn't play a few tiebreaks.
He's the one that all along I've thought, I'm not sure. And Craig Tiley's very confident. He's been pretty confident about all of these people.
I mean, if it looks to me like of that crop of players that have been on the sidelines, it is possible that we might see none of them. Depending on whether you include Raonic in that crop, who it sounds like we will see. But, you know, Wawrinka, Nishikori, Djokovic, Murray, Serena, it is possible that hugely anticipated Australian Open where everyone's going to be coming back and seeded lowly, you know, we could have none of them.
Yeah, I suppose, I mean, Rafa doesn't quite count in that group, does he? He did obviously give up on the O2 early He is absolutely looking in great shape and is playing at a good level and moving pretty strongly. But somebody did make an excellent stat, I did see on Twitter, that he's never won a slam without playing a lead-in tournament.
He needs matches, doesn't he? He's very open about the fact that he needs matches and momentum. So whether he can get the requisite sort of match practice that he, you know, he could benefit from a few longer matches early on, couldn't he? But he has a pretty sweet draw, I would say. Look at it. He probably has the best draw of the main contenders. Estrella Burgos round one. No major chance. I mean, the first seed he would meet is Jumher Choric is in his portion, but you know, I know he's had a couple of victories over Nadal, but he's not come through of late in the way that a lot of people thought. Isner's in that portion. Cilic, Cuevas, Muller, Carreño Busta, those are the seeds in his quarter, and he definitely have taken that if you'd offered it to him a week or so ago.
I think Nadal looks absolutely fine from what I've seen of him, and I think he's going to be a massive factor here. I really do, and I'm not sure whether I'm going to pick him for the title yet, because we've still got a couple of days left. The predictions competition, incidentally, which Simon Briggs has been forced into entering this year, is now 22 teams strong. We still have a couple of days left if you'd like to enter. Wayne Ferreira is in it.
There are systematic reasons why I always do really badly at predictions.
Oh, yeah. Which are?
That I have to work 24 hours a day in the 2 days before a slam, because that's my worst time. So I don't have any time to think about it.
Everybody, Simon's got his excuses in early. It's because he has to work hard and that he doesn't do very well. But anyway, and he works in tennis all the time. So, you know, if that's not good preparation.
But you have to look at the draw, don't you,
and
sort of work your way through it systematically.
Yes, you do. So
I don't have time for that rubbish.
Get on it, Simon. You've got 2 days left to work it out. And if you want to enter and take on Simon, Catherine and myself, you can.
If we did the draw a week earlier, I'd be all right.
But anyway, Nadal, to me, looks in great nick. And looking at his draw, I mean, you're right. He's got a great section. That is a really good section with Cilic and Isner. I mean, Isner's dangerous, but I can't see it. And then you're looking at a semi-final.
Dimitrov, looking at a rerun.
Kyrgios,
yes.
I'm not convinced that Dimitrov's getting that far. That is a horrendous section of the draw for these guys. Kyrgios against Songa in the third round. Winner to play Dimitrov or Rublev. And don't forget, Rublev beat Dimitrov at the US Open.
Dimitrov wasn't quite there in Brisbane. His service action was being quite closely observed on TV, and he was double faulting all over the shop, not getting into the court.
Yeah, he hit 20 double faults that week. And against Kyrgios, I've always thought that Dimitrov's style of game works out quite well, because he can blunt Kyrgios's power with his movement and his ability to slice. And he did that for the first set. And then, really, I mean, although Kyrgios, I thought, served really well those second two sets, it was more about Dimitrov's game coming
away. Good match, though, wasn't it?
Sorry?
Really good match.
Oh, yeah. Well, Kyrgios is interesting. We talked about him briefly. You said last week that you don't feel that Kyrgios physically is up to making a big run here.
He's got the strapping of his knee this week, so that's encouraging. But I just feel that after the second round, he'll have a strapping on somewhere else or on the same place. And look, if he goes deep, no one will be more happy than me, because I absolutely love watching him play. And I think he's the best thing potentially that could happen to this sport. But you just don't have great faith in his physical integrity.
No, if his body is to have any chance of standing up to seven best of five set matches, he needs to be going into a Grand Slam in absolute 100% health. And he wasn't last week in Brisbane, was he? He did have the strapping. He did have issues with the knee. Yes, it's good to hear that that's off the knee this week, but it didn't seem like something that would clear up in a couple of days to me. So I'm sad to say that I've got question marks over whether he can go the distance physically here. That is my favourite section of the draw, incidentally. Shapovalov, Tsitsipas, incidentally, that's a round one match, cracking. Kyrgios, Rublev, Bagdatis and Dimitrov.
I love that Tsitsipas guy. Greek, one-handed backhand, big, beefy bloke with flowing blonde hair, and he's going to take on little Dennis, the menace.
Little Dennis.
Awesome. I love Dennis, though, don't you?
They could be playing lefty backhand, righty backhand at the same side of the court all day long.
Yeah, it's going to be a cracker.
We're talking to Tsitsipas's agent, Patricio Appe, last night. He also looks after Alexander Zverev, so he's got some busy times ahead.
He has.
He's got a pretty decent crop there. And Tsitsipas is clearly a personality and a talent.
Yeah.
And another reason why this next group, the next gen group, I mean, he wasn't actually at the tournament in Milan, but it's got a lot going for it.
Yeah, they're exciting, these guys. And as you said, Catherine, it's the winner of that one, Shapovalov Tsitsipas against Tsonga, winner of that plays against Kyrgios, potentially. So it's all happening.
Yeah, Tsonga that Shapovalov knocked out of the US Open, of course. Yes. I mean, that section of the draw is just glorious.
And, well, yeah, not so glorious that Kyle Edmonds landed in it.
No.
Given that we've got one man in the draw, he's got a first round against Kevin Anderson. That's the stuff of nightmares.
Yeah, that's tough.
Who he lost to in Paris, of course. I'd call that a 50-50, though.
No, it's not 50-50.
Well, US Open finalist Kevin Anderson.
I mean,
I was so impressed with Kyle in Brisbane. Ankle aside,
well.
I really was impressed.
He did play very well.
Yeah, I mean, he was excellent. But it's a big deal to beat Anderson and that serve in the first round.
40-60, I'd go.
All right. Well, that's not that different to 50-50, given how raucously you reacted.
What are you saying, Simon?
70-30, sorry. I like Kyle a lot. I think he's making good progress. But, I mean, we haven't seen Anderson yet this season, is that right?
He played first week of the year, got to the final, and got beaten by Gilles Simon in the tournament in Pune.
And he won Abu Dhabi, but again, exhibition.
Yeah.
And he played Thiem in the final, who, I mean, that's my favourite weird head-to-head on the ATP Tour, the fact that Kevin Anderson is 7-0 against Dominic
Thiem. Is that
right? Yeah.
That is weird.
Yeah.
I love matchups. You know, stars make matchups and all that. Anyway, Thiem, you mentioned him. He's in the third section of the draw, and he could play Mannarino in the third round, could play Wawrinka in the fourth. I just can't see Wawrinka getting that far, personally. And it could be Djokovic after that. I mean, that section is just a lot of question marks, really, because of Wawrinka and Djokovic. And also, the Zverev brothers could face each other in the third round.
Which, have we seen that before?
I can't remember having seen it.
I remember a tournament. I can't remember where it was, but I remember they could have faced one another. They were on a collision course, and one of them lost one round too early. But if it happened, it hasn't happened for a long time.
I don't think it's going to happen, though, is it? Because, I mean, although Misha's seeded higher than Hyun Chung and Daniil Medvedev, who will probably start out against in the first two rounds, his seeding is based a lot on that one run here last year.
Quick courts here, though. You ruling him out having another run?
I just...
Yes, you are.
I'm not seeing lightning striking twice then. I mean, Chung's very solid, isn't he?
And a very good mover as well. So, yeah, Kokkinakis in that section. He looked good in Perth.
We've got a soft spot for Tenassi, haven't we?
Yeah, beats Zverev in Perth. Again, exhibition Hopman Cup, but exhibition definitely played with a bit more intent and commitment than your average exhibition, it has to be said.
Yeah. Bottom section of the draw in which Roger Federer, the second seed, is in. He could play Richard Gasquet in the third round. He's got Aliash Bedene in the first round. It would be so Aliash Bedene to beat him, wouldn't it?
If he beats him, he's not going to, but let's imagine a world where Aliash Bedene beats Roger Federer. On the Monday night session, I think that's when that match is going to be played. How will the British press approach it?
We'll be banging our heads against the wall.
Will you speak to him? Will you go to the press conference?
Well, I'm not going to speak to you.
you've let me down badly. I think.
What's the headline? I know you don't write your own headlines, but I mean, what approach would you take?
Defector enjoys. Highlight of career after snubbing the country that spent thousands of pounds trying to help him out.
Simon Briggs there, here on the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and Eurosport. So anyway, Gasquet, Federer, potentially third round. I love this as a first round. It's Thomas Burdick in that section against Alex de Minaur. Have you seen
Minaur.
This kid play?
De Minaur.
No, it's de Minaur, all right? I've heard the kids say it. Now, he's 18. He looks physically a bit like Leighton Hewitt because
he looks physically a bit like a child. He is implausibly youthful.
He does look like his mum has packed his lunch.
I saw him actually, my first glimpse of him was here last year as a 17-year-old playing. He won a round here last year, I think, and he played Sam Querrey.
I can't remember.
He played Sam Querrey and he got a set off Sam Querrey. I'm trying to remember whether that was second round or first round. I have a feeling he won a round and it was second round, but I could be wrong. Anyway, he got a set off Sam Querrey. He was playing on one of the outside courts, but on one of the more one of the outside courts with more seating. The atmosphere was sensational. It was a glorious day, and he was impressive. And he looked like, I mean, I couldn't believe how young he looked. It was ridiculous. He looked like one of the ball kids.
And he was interviewed after his match win the other day against Milos Raonic in Brisbane, and Catherine texted me and said he's implausibly youthful.
Yeah.
Because his interview was hilarious, and he seems like a lovely lad.
Isn't he quite tall and gangly?
No, he's small. I mean, he's quite short.
Slight.
I've only seen him on TV.
I mean, he looks
tall because he's so thin.
Short, relatively speaking, because I mean I'm 6'7", but you know he doesn't look tall to me. What he has is an incredible hand-eye coordination to return serve. He thrashed Feliciano Lopez last night in Sydney. He did the same to Milos Raonic. He was blunting these guys' serve. He was standing on the baseline and just basically saying, come on, hit it harder, you know, at me. And he was picking it up and returning it violently at these guys.
Are you saying he's going to beat Thomas Burdick?
No.
Oh.
I think
it's a disappointing draw, isn't it, from the Australian Open?
The best of five sets thing is really important. I think he will be impressive. I think he will hurt. I think it'll be. You remember when Shapovalov played Burdick at Queen's, and it was a fantastic match, and he wasn't far off taking him out, but he didn't win in the end. The nous of these guys usually ends up prevailing. But tell you what, Dimonor is good news for the sport right now. Really exciting player.
Maybe it would be good for him not to have too much of a deep run and sort of get ahead of himself at this stage.
No, we'd like a bit of hype here.
When is it ever good news not to win tennis matches for a tennis player?
I love hype. And
well, I think it would have been good news for Laura not to have won Wimbledon Junior at the age of 15, for instance.
No, what would have been good for Laura would have been not to have a wrist injury that put her out for 2 years.
Yeah, well, I think the pressure of living up to that title still wasn't. Took a while to deal with.
We've not found Simon Briggs in positive frame of mind today, have we?
We're going to go and buy Simon a beer afterwards, aren't we? Cheer him up a bit. But Laura was unable to get into qualifying here, I heard, because it was a 96 qualifying draw in the women's. And
smaller qualifying draw than the men's here, and smaller than any other slam.
That's not right. It's 96 at three slams.
Oh, but it's the only slam where it's smaller than the where they haven't. Where the men's and the women's have a different draw size.
I don't know. We'll have to look into that.
I'm pretty sure that's the case, and I haven't heard any explanation of that.
So, Burdick against Delpo is a potential third round. Goffin, who's in that section, a lot of people think Goffin may be having a massive run here. What do you think, Simon? Could you see Goffin being here in the semis?
He's got to get past Del Potro, probably.
Del Potro, Burdick.
It's not a great court for him.
And then he might have to play Federer in the quarterfinals.
If he gets that far, I think he's in with a shout. I don't think the court suits him here brilliantly, but I'd love to see it.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of... He takes the ball so early, doesn't he, which can be quite effective on a... Suddenly, at this stage of the year, it can be disconcerting. People who aren't quite used to moving around the court, they're still kind of finding their feet. So those first few matches, he's going to probably cruise through them. Fanini in the third round. Yeah, he'll get to the quarters.
It's exciting. I can't wait. Can we start now? It's Friday as we speak to you. But
no,
anyway.
We can't blimmin' start now because it's raining,
David.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. Because Simon needs a bit of a jolt, we'll go and get him some caffeine, and then we'll talk about the women's draw in just a minute.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Right, so Simon Briggs is freshly caffeinated. He looks a bit jollier. He does need a shave, but we'll overlook that for now. The women's draw is just full of excitement and intrigue. Nigel Sears, in the podcast a few days ago, ran us through 26 names that he felt could be factors. And it's hard to argue. And the first, I mean, it's not the top half of the draw. I'm looking at the bottom half of the draw here. The eye has immediately drawn here to Venus Williams against Belinda Bencic in the first round. I mean, what a first round that is.
It's awful for Venus Williams. I think Belinda Bencic is... I'm picking Belinda Bencic to win that one. I've spoken a lot about how impressed I've been with her tennis so far this year. I know she lost out to Kerber in that Hopman Cup final, but Kerber, who I'm sure we'll talk about, was brilliant that day and throughout the Hopman Cup. So that is just awful news for Venus Williams. That was the first one when I bumped into you at baggage claim last night. That was the first question I asked you about the women's draw, who's got Belinda Bencic, and because you'd already memorised the draw by that stage, you were able to tell me that Venus had Belinda Bencic. Yeah. And I mean, what a match for the organisers to have to put on in lieu of the defending champion not being here. I mean, that is, of course, the marquee match.
Bencic played Serena in the first round last year, although she was
nowhere near. Nowhere near. And, what more can I say other than I'm picking the last year's finalists to lose first round, I'm sad to say.
Yeah, it's that section as well is the one that features Yulia Gerges, who is on now, I think, a 14-match winning run dating back to last year. And she won the tournament in the first week of the year here as well. Beat Caroline Wozniacki in the final. It could be, couldn't it, one of those tournaments where somebody like Gerges, who is just on a hot streak, continues it all the way through. Simon, what do you think?
Well, I mean, we had Ostapenko winning the French. We had Sloane Stephens winning the US Open. I mean, who would have picked either of those? So, actually, funnily enough, he said Nigel Sears picked 26. We've just been talking to Johanna Konta's new coach, Michael Joyce. And I think he said there are 25 women who can win it. So that was a remarkably similar verdict.
When are we going to be reading that article?
Yeah, that'll be in Saturday's papers back in the UK.
Did he list all 25?
No, we did have a long sit down, and I can tell you that Michael Joyce, he's not short of a word or two. We transcribed the interview. We have 3,500 words, so we're on the way to having a book after the first encounter with him of the season.
I wonder why you all looked so stressed out as you were tapping away. That's 3,500 words. That's quite a lot.
Also in that Venus Williams, Belinda Bencic quarter, by the way, Sloane Stephens, who's got Zhang Shuai first round. Upset alert, I would say. Zhang Shuai traditionally plays well here.
She's had that run here, didn't she, a couple of
years
ago?
Yeah, semi-finalist.
Has Sloane won a match since?
Well, no. I mean, yeah, on paper, maybe that's not that much of an upset.
Well, she's had a knee injury again. And as you say, her results have just fallen in the pond, really.
Svitolina in that quarter as well.
Yeah.
Brisbane champion.
Svitolina, who we're going to be reading about in the Telegraph soon, I believe, Simon Briggs.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm the first person to write about her cricketing interests. But she's moved to London in September, bought a place in southwest London, and is beginning to sort of adopt her as a she's going to bring the trophy home for the UK, even though she's not playing under our flag. I mean, she actually is the bookies' favourite or joint favourite now with Halep after the Muguruza withdrawal in Sydney. Muguruza was previously slightly ahead of them. But it's now dropped back a little bit.
Speaking of cricket, just quickly, by the way, have you seen, we all, I don't know whether you two take a different route into the tennis, but I have to walk pretty much around the MCG. Walk into the
terrible
tennis. There's a huge banner erected on the side of the MCG which just says hashtag beat England. It's really, really hostile and aggressive.
Pretty standard, I just thought.
Makes me a bit sad. There's a one dayer happening on Sunday.
Okay, I might be going to that. Excellent. Anyway, cricket. You went to the cricket the other day, didn't you?
Did you see we've had a problem with official ceremonies in Australian sport the last week, because having already destroyed the draw here last night, the previous ceremony was the awards due for the presentation for the winning team in Sydney when they completed a 4-0 win in the Ashes Test Series. And Australia, even their own writers have been giving them a kicking for this rather sort of provocative move where they put an Australian hand done up in blue with the stars of the flag on it, and 4 fingers raised towards the sky, and then they had the English hand clenched with no fingers up to symbolise 4-0. It did look like they were kind of performing an obscene gesture in the direction of the English cricket team.
Magnanimous in victory, as always.
If I could just take a picture of Catherine Whittaker's face as you were describing that, Simon, I mean, I'm not sure my camera would have survived it, but she wasn't pleased. So the rest of this draw, the bottom half of the women's draw, Caroline Wozniacki now is the second seed because she's moved up into world number two position. A few people, I think, are thinking this might be the one. This might be the year where she finally gets over the line in the slam.
Simon Briggs doesn't.
Like, well, I mean, you say that Goffin's not so ideally suited to the pace of the course. Is Caroline Wozniacki suited to them either?
Remember when she got a thrashing last year from Konta, didn't she?
I mean, she's in the same quarter as Ostapenko, Van der Wey. I mean, these are big ball strikers, aren't they? Can she handle the pace?
The draws are right early on for her, isn't it? I mean, you've got sort of Kiki Burton, Cece Bellis, the young Americans in there. I think she's going to, reach at least fourth round. Van der Wey is problematic, I think. But Van der Wey and Ostapenko would meet, before they play Wozniacki. So she won't have to play both Van der Wey and Ostapenko, but she'll likely have to play one of them. And that could be problematic, I think.
Right, so who's coming through this bottom half of the draw then? Gerges, maybe, or Bencic, or
Svitolina, hopefully.
Svitolina.
Yeah, I mean, she did look good in Brisbane. Let's
she's never got beyond a quarter final at the Grand
Slam. Yeah, I mean, she has been building, hasn't she? She won three quite significant events last year. She still has underachieved at the Slams, but you just think that she's kind of gathering self-belief as she goes, and her ranking continuing to climb, and she just seems like she might be on the verge of doing something special.
Top half of the draw, Simona Halep is the top seed here, yet to win a slam. Should say apologies for not referencing the fact that she also won a title last week. I forgot to mention that in my roundup when Catherine was not so well. Simona Halep won this title indoors in the end because of all the rain that they've been having in Auckland. So well done to her. She could face, I mean, this is not a great draw. She could face Petra Kvitova in round three. which is rough. There's Barty against Vesnina as a potential fourth round. In that section, then it would most likely be a quarterfinal against Konta or Pliskova. These are tough players to be getting through early on, aren't they?
Yeah, I think she looked pretty good, didn't she, in her last tournament? But again, you would expect this to be a power players' slam. It certainly was last year with the Williams sisters meeting each other in the final, and Pliskova and Konta probably.
Konta's got Brengel first round.
That's a good draw for her.
Not a bad draw, is it?
Yeah. And then Strichova probably as a third round if she gets that far. Again, sort of a crafty player rather than a power hitter. But Pliskova in the fourth round for Konta potentially, that's not going to be easy.
What do you think, Catherine? My eye also drawn to Garbine Muguruza, who's got no real match practice coming in because she's been injured.
Yeah, she's at the bottom half of that half, if you like, the bottom quarter. So I think Konta's going to be okay up until the fourth round, when I would expect her to meet Pliskova. I can't see many banana skins for either of those two in their portion of the draw. Halep Kvitova, I think Halep probably would come through that. Barty is in that section. She's on court as we speak, I think, taking on Dasha Gavrilova in Sydney in a quarterfinal. So I think she could muster something. She would be a fourth round opponent of Halep or Kvitova. So, and that's a match I'd like to see. I think, I wouldn't put her as the favourite, but I think something could happen there. But I don't know who's coming through that section. Am I going to say Konta? If it's the Konta that's played in Brisbane, I think Konta. But that the loss to Radvanska was a worry.
Yeah, it was windy conditions. She didn't enjoy playing Radvanska style.
And bear in mind that Brisbane, although not officially an indoor tournament, is in practice.
Yeah, it so has that kind of.
That was actually the point that Joyce made: is that she was basically acclimatized to indoor tennis. Hadn't had much preparation in Sydney. I think she's somebody who does need very careful preparation. She's not somebody who can wing it, is she?
Mm. She's impressive. Meticulous. When he came on to talk to her, I thought he was pretty decisive and wasn't afraid to just, as Nigel Sears was telling us the other day in the podcast, to coach her and actually give her specific advice, not just kind of bigging her up, but pushing her on. What scoreline are you looking at there, Simon Briggs? Heather Watson, who's in semi-final action at the moment in Hobart.
More reason for cheer for Simon Briggs. Although it does mean if she loses in Hobart today, she'll be in Melbourne sooner and you'll get to speak to her sooner.
4-1 down.
Yeah, she was on a roll there because she lost the first set 6-4, won the second 6-1. But she's now 4-1 down in the third, so that's not looking.
She loves a comeback though, Heather Watson. Don't write her off.
The final section of the draw that we haven't looked at yet is arguably the best of the lot, because in that Muguruza section, just below her, she could face Radvanska, incidentally, in the third round, could Muguruza. But the section in which you've got Angelique Kerber, who's in just banging form right
now. Banging.
Isn't she? I mean, what form that woman is in at the moment. So she's like she was 2 years ago.
Suddenly. She is. She's fearsome. She's found her confidence and her aggression again, hasn't she? She's not afraid of a tennis ball anymore.
It's nice to see, isn't it? Because she's one of the good girls, you know, to deal with. She's a really likeable person, and I don't think anyone enjoyed seeing that just the misery she was going through last year, having to try and live up to expectations. I can't remember who it was. Was it Sears who said, look out for her this year?
Yes,
I think it was Nigel. She's liberated, and she's going to be back to her best. And you know, I put a top three. Probably players for the title.
I've got her coming through that quarter, I think.
Well, the reason I highlighted it particularly as well is because in that section, she could have to play in the third round, Kerber likely to have to play either Sharapova or Sevastova.
Who would meet in the second round, a repeat of their match in New York,
Sharapova,
of course.
Sharapova has got a rough old draw there, but that's the beauty of the unseeded player, isn't it, in these sections. Caroline Garcia, right at the bottom of the top half of the draw there, is somebody that I've been looking forward to watching all year long, really, ever since the exploits of late last season. But she did
all
hurt
year
her
long.
Back. All right.
It's the 12th of January.
Yeah, well, I have. It's
Feels like a long time that I've been out here already.
It's just plain accuracy, Catherine Whittaker, is what it is. Okay, I've rather exaggerated. But yeah, 12 days is how long I've been looking forward to watching Caroline Garcia. Hopefully her back injury is okay. So we've also got Heather Watson in that section of the draw. She has got Yulia Putintseva first round.
Poots to her friends.
And Kristina Mladenovic maybe in the second round. Mladenovic trying to arrest a 14-match winning losing streak, which she's currently on.
Yeah, good draw for Heather.
Well, yes. Putintseva's tough, though. She can make life difficult.
Yeah, I mean, she's not done that much actually since she won St. Petersburg, which was almost a year ago.
No, that's right.
What do we think Maria Sharapova's doing? Where do we think she's getting to?
It's so hard to predict Sevastova, isn't it? I mean, when she's playing well...
Where was it? It was Brisbane where she was woeful against...
She was, because the first two or three matches Sevastova played, she was amazing. She barely lost games. And then suddenly she ran into Alexandra Sasnovich. And I kid you not, Sevastova was complaining in the first game to her coach about her own form, about how she hated everything. And I've not seen negativity like that on a court.
Well, not even for me.
If Simon Briggs,
Briggs-esque negativity.
If Simon Briggs was a tennis player, he would be like that.
I think she'd find a way to be positive, though, if she were facing a matchup with Maria Sharapova in the second round,
don't you think? Well, she beat her at the US Open, of course. And that was a very good match.
I think Kerber will take Sharapova out third round.
I agree. I think it's all a bit academic because I think Kerber's... coming through whoever she plays.
Right then, so who's going to win the Australian Open?
Oh, no, we've got two more days, David.
Two more days to go. It's exciting, isn't it? Crikey, can't wait.
You're not going to press Simon for his picks now?
No, because he's got a couple more days. He can actually have a think about it. And maybe.
Do you know how many thousands of words have got to go in the paper before
that? Is there anything else that you want to tell us about that you're going to be writing and we're going to be reading about?
I don't know. We're about to go and see Billie Jean King in 15 minutes.
Well, so, that's pretty good.
I said that very casually, Simon. If I had a date with Billie Jean King in 15 minutes, I would be in a sprightly mood.
Yeah, but it's not me specifically. It's just her open press.
She's not telling the people she's with, I'm seeing Simon Briggs in 15 minutes.
Well, you know, probably is.
Do you know what she's going to be chatting about?
I think she's just going to answer any question, but I shall probably bring up Margaret Court Arena. Now, this is something else I've got wrong, isn't it? Because in the spring, I thought that by this stage, the Australian Open would have changed the name of Margaret Court Arena.
You weren't alone. I think a lot of people thought that.
And I spoke to somebody who works for Tennis Australia yesterday, and they said what you weren't taking into account is that there was the gay marriage debate, there was the victory for what we might call the progressive view, and that's taken a lot of sting out of it. And they say that they haven't had anybody come to them and say, I don't want to play on Margaret Court Arena.
It's interesting, isn't it? Doesn't it? You could say you'd expect that to enhance the strength of feeling around the issue, but no.
I think his view was that it just made Court look like a bit of a fool. I mean, I know she already did to us, but, okay, she had supporters in the wider area of Australian politics. She was almost the sort of Farage figure, if you can conflate this debate with Brexit. She was the one who was leading the right wingers, I suppose you might say, or certainly the intolerant fringe. And the fact that they lost... She is still clearly well out of step with most of the people at this tournament, but I think it's reduced her relevance in some ways, made it less of an issue.
Just as a final point on that, just like to draw attention to our good friend Mary Carrillo, who we hope is going to be another guest on the Tennis Podcast over the next couple of weeks, because she's a Tennis Podcast listener and we love her. She has been doing a documentary with and about Margaret Court, which is due to air at the end of January. She spent 4 days in the company of Margaret Court. She also went and interviewed Billie Jean King and Martina Navratilova for what sounds like a fascinating documentary about when a legacy can be safe, when regardless of what you might do in your life thereafter, whether your legacy is safe or not. Anyway, fascinating question. And we look forward to seeing that. We also look forward to the Australian Open, which is due to start in just a couple of days from now. Have you got anything else you'd like to say before I go and get excited?
Coverage starts on Eurosport, midnight Sunday night, Monday morning.
And at 7:45 in the morning, UK time, Rob Curling will be presenting. Catherine will be doing all the interviews and chatting away, courtside.
Yes. And I expect I'll make my first appearance during that 15 minutes of build-up. I'll be having a... I'll be having my hotly anticipated chat with Rob Curling via the satellite airwaves.
Excellent. Simon Briggs will be tapping away on his typewriter, 3,000 words a minute for the next 3 days.
I'm watching all my predictions lose in the first round.
Yes, I'll be commentating on BBC Radio 5 Live and 5 Live Sports Extra over the course of the fortnight. We are the Tennis Podcast. We will be back every single day of this Australian Open with daily shows. We might even come back on Sunday just for an extra, because why not? And we will be doing that. We're also sponsored by La Manga Club, the place that Catherine and I had a wonderful tennis holiday. Go and check them out.
The place that's responsible for my forehand,
which we have yet to test out whether it's actually any good.
There's video evidence.
Our rematch actually now is part of the predictions competition as well. We're asking for a winner.
You're playing here?
Well, we'll see.
Rod Laver.
Yeah. Well, Catherine's not been very well. Can we play in 10 minutes? Okay, no, that didn't work.
I know for a fact, David, that you forgot to pack your tennis racket.
I did do that.
I've got two with me.
Have you? Brilliant. Have you brought that one Laura Robson gave us?
Yeah, that's my favourite racket.
Excellent. Can I
use
that
one? Wilson Steam. It was discontinued.
Really?
But it's bloody good. It's a cheap racket because you get extra spin for the same shot.
Brilliant. Right.
I don't think extra spin is what David Law needs. He is, quote, a slice and dicer.
Well, I think that'll be quite effective for him then.
Yeah. I'm ready. We are also brought to you in association with our Kickstarter backers, because you lot have been amazing. We have executive producers Triple S, Melanie Bowes, our champion of last year, tennisballs.com, who have supported us for the second year in a row. We have a mascot. We have Charlie the ferret. Charlie's been having a bit of a bad time of late because his friend Milan the cat recently passed away. We'd just like to pass on our condolences to Charlie's mum and Charlie because of that. But Charlie's going to be following the Australian Open with relish over the next couple of weeks. He can't wait. He's been wearing his Tennis Podcast t-shirt. We will be back with daily shows every single day throughout the Australian Open. Speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.